From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Welcome to an hour that we call the civics class. These are topics that aren't necessarily flashy or exciting, but they are important to understand. And we talked with people who made them seem less confusing. See what you think. First up, school receivership. California school districts that get into financial trouble have this option. It's not bankruptcy, and it doesn't happen often, but it is an emergency strategy that can keep a district afloat. In May of 2019, I talked with Karen Moore, director of the School Fiscal Services Division for the California Department of Education. She explained that there are annual financial reviews and checkpoints in place long before a district would get to receivership.
There are also measures that are taken throughout the year to make sure that a district is on track or to try and counsel them if they kind of go off track. So their annual budget is prepared and adopted by the district governing board. It is then reviewed and approved by the County Office of Education. And then in addition to that annual review of the budget, there are two interim reporting periods where two times during the year, the district kind of updates their fiscal status and the county has an opportunity at those times as well to look and assess how the district is doing fiscally. So they're looking at not just the current year, but the subsequent 2 years as well. So it kind of gives them a look into the future if things look like they're turning.
It's important to make a distinction in the word superintendent, that sometimes we have the state superintendent and then we have the county superintendent. They're two different bodies.
Correct.
And they will also be monitoring a specific school district. The county's monitoring as a district is moving through its crises, its audits, and then at some point, there's going to be a decision made that, can I call it a rescue or an emergency action needs to happen?
Yeah.
And then what happens next? Let's say the district runs out of cash. The trigger is present.
These things don't typically happen overnight, right? People are aware there is kind of a crisis of sorts that's brewing. And often the district, with the help of the county and sometimes the help of the state, are able to turn things around. So that's always the goal. So there's lots of intervention that happens along the way, and it could take quite a long period of time for something to actually get to such a point.
That is what the ultimate goal here is, that there will be an emergency loan made to the school district.
Well, that's kind of the last resort. If nothing else works, then yes.
In the meantime, there's a phrase called negative certification. And if a school goes into negative certification, then what is the status?
A school district can be, they're certified as positive, qualified, or negative. So positive means they're fine. They're going to be able to meet their obligations for the current and two subsequent years. Qualified is they may not make their obligations for the current or two subsequent years. Negative is they won't, without some action, meet their obligations for the current or the immediate subsequent fiscal year. So districts are negative sometimes. It's not a common thing necessarily, but it doesn't necessarily foretell bankruptcy. There are some every year. We don't have bankruptcies every year. I think we've had 9 in the last 18 years. The negative status is, you know, there are usually several a year. I think the high was 13 one year back in the tough economic times. I think we had almost 200 districts that were in a qualified status. So it's a early warning system, and it usually works, and it usually things are able to resolve themselves without needing a state loan.
The negative certification originates at the county level?
Well, typically the agency self-certifies for themselves, whether they think they're positive, qualified, or negative. Their oversight agency can change that certification if they disagree.
So back to the concept of receivership. Ultimately, there's going to have to be a loan, but the loan requires a piece of legislation.
Correct.
So it seems logical that if a school district is working on a loan, they're also talking with a lawmaker to work out some sort of legislation. And that also says that every school that goes into receivership would have a unique bill connected to it for its loan.
Correct. Yes.
And then lawmakers will discuss it. It has to be approved. It goes to the governor's desk. All that sounds like it could take a lot of time.
these things can happen fairly quickly. It depends, for starters, if the legislature is in session. That is important. But these are typically urgency bills that can move fairly quickly through the legislative process. So we hope that it doesn't come to where they need a state loan. People are aware. The county office is intimately involved. The state has a role. Probably their legislators already know that this district is in financial crisis. And I'm speaking generally. I think everybody is looking to exhaust all measures to make sure that they can make whatever cuts that they need to make, that if there's borrowing that can happen without needing a state loan, that that can happen. And then when all of those avenues are exhausted, then the state loan becomes a reality. And things can move fairly quickly, I think. People agree that we need to make this happen. People need to get paid, and the district needs to go on.
So that raises the question, how often has this happened? How many schools have gone into receivership? And then how often do schools get out of receivership and get rolling again on their own fiscally?
From 1991 to now, about the last 18 years, we've had 9. For the 10 or 12 years before that, we had 28, I think. So what happened was when the Richmond School District got a loan back in early 90s, there was a bill. It was called AB 1200. It was authored by Delaine Easton, who later became the state superintendent. And it established some oversight measures, what we use now. And so I think it's been very effective over time. So that's the budget review and those interim reports. That bill created an organization called FICMAT, the Fiscal Crisis and Management Assistance Team. So there's lots of work that goes around monitoring and oversight to help with that process.
And of those 9, how many are still in receivership right now?
4 still have loans. 3 of those districts have what we call a trustee. 1 of those districts has an administrator where they have full control of the district.
These would be the individuals that step in to take over.
Correct.
In place of the school board or the superintendent. Who directs and guides those people?
It's called a state takeover. And it's called a state administrator, where the state comes in and has control. That responsibility has shifted back to the county office. We don't have any districts that have gone bankrupt and gotten a loan under this new process. So I don't know exactly how it will work. But what I do know is for the 4 districts that still have outstanding loans, in 3 of the cases, we had a state trustee, and I'll explain that. In 1, we had a state administrator. We had contracts with them. So we had to revise those contracts to turn them back to the county so that the county now is responsible for those districts. Back to the administrator versus trustee, when the loan is significantly large.
Such as
if the loan request is 200 times the amount of their recommended reserve for economic uncertainties. So that's the amount that they're required to set aside for reserves. Then they require a state administrator. And what that means, I say state administrator, now I guess it's a county administrator, but it's hard to change that term. That person comes in and essentially runs the district. They act as the superintendent, they act as the board. They kind of have full control and they work with the community. There are lots of laws surrounding how they are supposed to act and who, you know, they're supposed to consult with people, but ultimately the decisions are theirs, along with now the county office. It used to be the state.
So whichever school district might go into receivership mm-hmm. next becomes the school district that goes through this process mm-hmm. since the change in the law for
yes.
the first time. And there's still state involvement because
yes.
the state gives the county a list of people to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
The county puts them in place. The school district pays for those people.
The state superintendent still has a role. The state board of education has a role. FICMAT is kind of in an oversight role as well.
To help the school district get out of that situation. So maybe a district would want to go into receivership because it's run out of cash and it has no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't a school district want to go into receivership?
I think 2 primary reasons. 1 is it loses control of the district. The board members become advisory only. They don't have a specific role. They don't get paid. The district superintendent is no longer there. It is the administrator that comes in and takes over. So while the administrator is working with the locals, ultimately it's this person's decisions that kind of control the district. And the goal is to get them out of receivership. And the other reason is it's expensive. It's a state loan that can take up to 20 years to repay. There's interest. They're paying for the trustee or the administrator. They're paying for additional studies that might have to be done. They're paying for an audit that's probably more expensive. So it's not necessarily a cheap proposition.
What's the range of loan amounts that you've seen in receiverships?
In recent history, in the last 18 years or so, I think the low has been $1.5 million-ish, and the large was $100 million. That was Oakland Unified.
So as we move forward, are there any other anticipated changes to the process? It is somewhat new because of what just shifted last fall. On the other hand, it's a process that has been in place and that has been working for a few decades now for schools that need it.
That's hard to say. There have been, since AB 1200 was first enacted, changes along the way in some ways to strengthen some of those requirements and some, say, tweaks along the way. This is kind of a fundamental shift, moving the primary responsibility back to the county. So it's hard to say as we kind of work through this process. And it's also, I think, a reality that with each specific emergency loan, there are sometimes little different conditions that are assigned to them. And so depending on the next one to come up, there might be some nuance, something that people feel is necessary to add to the legislation.
This has been a lesson in receivership. We aren't applying it to any specific district at this point. Is there anything else to know about it? The trigger, again, as you said, would be a district running out of cash. That doesn't seem to be anything arbitrary.
No, I would just say it's not a lot of fun for anybody, right? And I think whatever can be done to kind of forestall that and avoid that would be good. You know, whatever people can do to work together, whatever, you know, the county is, I think, willing to step in and help. We're willing to step in and help. And so we hope that things work themselves out, as many of them have in the past.
That was Karen Moore, director of the School Fiscal Services Division for the California Department of Education. We talked in May of 2019. There's more at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to an encore episode of Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.
Thank you.